Hello, and welcome to Recent Activity, your new favorite entertainment review podcast that attempts to cover every film, every show, all at once. I am your co-host, Andrew Morgan. With me, as always, is a man who's about to drop a sweet diss track about me after this recording, Mr. Shane Beauregard. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I admit, you got me in the defensive, and I don't even know what you're going to say, but I'm on the defensive already.
Well, I figured we kind of been batting around the whole Fall Guy thing in messages to each other already, so I was like, he's going to come at me at some point, and we'll see what happens. So, but good to see you regardless. glad to be back on the train. It is my birthday, so I'm working on my birthday, fucking piece of shit. couldn't redo this date. We got to get right to this big episode we got, Shane, today. With
huge.
The official open of summer movie season. So happy, whatever that means to you, thing. I don't know. It used to mean a big thing because it used to be like the big Marvel movie kickoff. And for the last, 15 years of my life?
15 years, yeah.
So this is a whole new world. We have the Fall Guy to cover. That is the movie that came out number one over the weekend. Was it enough? We'll get to that. We'll also finally talk about Shogun, as Shane was like forgetting that even existed because he's watched it, so long ago, as opposed to me, which I'm like, I finally caught up and I'm like, come on, man, we still got to talk about it, right? I'm that guy. Like, after everybody's talked it all the way through, it's like, come on, somebody talk about it with me, please. So we'll do that
as
well.
That's what I'm here for, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. it's recent activity. It doesn't have to be recent like it just happened, all right, people? We all come to these things when we like. You also caught up with a few other movies that we might toss in there at the end. But let's get to the main course here, Shane. Not only is this more in the Shane wheelhouse, but it's officially summer movie season where, there's going to be other monkeys on the screen for you to possibly love. There's Fall Guy, there, stuntmen stuff, there's other action things to do, and even like stuff like the Bike Riders is going to be this summer, which I'm probably looking forward to possibly the most. I'd have to look at the full list, but like we even get a little prestige smattering around there that you would even like, because that's your other crazy boyfriend who you just don't tell other people about, Tom Hardy, will be front row center for that too. So it's going to be an interesting summer. Did you have anything at the top of the brain, or how high was the Fall Guy as far as like the anticipation meter for the summer?
I forgot when we did our rankings, but it was right there around number three or four.
Did we do rankings? The Fall Guy, I didn't think we did full rankings. I thought we did action thing maybe.
Yeah, we did like anticipated action movies or like summer stuff. That's why I had King Kong in mind.
Right.
And you didn't have it anywhere on your map.
Right.
So, but it was up there for me, to be honest with you. It was like right inside, I would say my top three I was looking forward to.
Right. Yeah, man. I was looking forward to this too. Saw it opening weekend, obviously. That's why we're covering it today. Both you and I do. When did you go? I'm curious when you went.
I went Saturday afternoon to a 2:40 showing.
Okay.
With my kids.
Oh, okay. We'll have to, put a pin in that because I definitely want to know how they felt about it too. Because that's interesting. Somebody said that to me about like, is this a movie you could take to kids? And I was like, depending on age level, it's more violent. There's not really much swearing, if at all. And I'm like, it seems pretty harmless, but we'll get to all of that in a minute. But all right, so set the scene for me, because when I went Sunday, 7 o'clock, I was underwhelmed by the amount of people in the audience, but there's also like a billion showings of this movie. But then we can get to the actual box office returns, because I think in retrospect, it was kind of like the canary in the coal mine. So how was Saturday for you?
Yeah, surprisingly Saturday, like I said, I took my kids. I had a group of four, group of three. And the theater was honestly like 95% full we went. Yeah, and I went to look at the 1 o'clock tickets, and that seating was about 80% capacity. So
interesting.
Yeah, that's why when we get to the numbers, I was kind of surprised.
Well, I'll just open it all up. I mean, the Fall Guy was supposed to be it's in the Marvel spot for the Marvel spot that hasn't relinquished that spot, like we said, since the early days of the MCU's start. I'm lucky because, again, it's my birthday weekend. It's that way every year. I always take off that Friday or whatever, so that way I could see a later Thursday show or see it with nobody or less people on a Friday morning. And this year, not so much, because we only have Deadpool Wolverine, which is in a couple months. And The Fall Guy takes its place here, starring Ryan Gosling as Colt Seavers. This is based, of course, loosely. I mean, I can kind of ask you maybe how loosely, if you remember how much of The Fall Guy maybe you watched as a kid or any of those things. I have a very loose thing. Like, I know Lee Majors. I've seen the show a little bit, but I don't have a full recollection. So we can kind of get into that. But Emily Blunt as Jodie Moreno, Aaron Taylor Johnson as Tom Ryder, Hannah Waddingham as Gail Meyer, the producer of the film they're making. Written by Drew Pearce, who has worked with David Leitch, the director, before doing Hobbs and Shaw. He also co-wrote Iron Man 3. So, you know, somewhat of a resume. We can dip into that in a minute. And of course, like I said, directed by David Leitch, who did, you know, Bullet Train last, Hobbs and Shaw before that, started out hot as the co-director of John Wick, was a former stunt coordinator, did Atomic Blonde and Deadpool 2 and some other things. So he kind of has a certain type, but now he's made his last two kind of quote-unquote originals, even though, like we said, this is based on IP. But, you know, he kind of is starting to go into these bigger blockbusters with big cast, but not from a franchise. The plot on here is about a down-and-out stuntman who must find the missing star of his ex-girlfriend's blockbuster film. This was tabbed to make probably around $35 million. It made $28.5 million domestic, $65.4 million for a worldwide total. Just for context, as we get into this as we go along, Bullet Train, his last film, opened up in August of 2022, not in like this pristine, prestigious spot, and it did $30 million domestic, so a little bit higher than what Fall Guy was. And Fall Guy, I mean, God, Shane, you must have seen this trailer how many times for how much we go to the theaters? It was like between that, Challengers, and I'm trying to think, there probably was one other that I saw like a million times.
Oh, Ghostbusters.
Oh yeah, for sure. So to see this kind of, it's getting pretty solid critical reviews. 83% Rotten Tomato with an 87% Rotten Tomato audience score, 73% or 73 Metascore, 7.3 IMDb, and a 3.6 Letterboxd. So doing pretty well critically for just like a summer blockbuster, a movie that has two stars and a burgeoning one in Aaron Taylor Johnson, considering we're like, is he going to possibly be the next Bond? At least having that question from a director that we kind of all know, if you're an action guy, like we both are, what are we seeing here? Before we get into the movie, what are you seeing with like the underperformance of the box office? Is this now are we going to go from superhero fatigue to Ryan Gosling fatigue? What are we doing?
See, you know, you kind of, like I said, you set me off a little bit this morning with that with that message, right? Uh-huh. So I'm like racking my brain. I'm like, he can't pin this on Ryan Gosling, right? Can't do it.
I didn't say I believe it.
No, I know. And I'm just like going through my head of the year so far, even though we are only in May. You know, outside of like Dune 2 and the Godzilla Kong franchise movie, it really hasn't been a strong box office year, no, per se. Like, we haven't had that movie that just like blew the doors open so far. I don't have a great answer for it, because we were talking about ticket prices earlier, and that's BS, right?
Yep. And streaming options have always been there, yeah, but weirdly enough, there's even less now, it seems, and especially this time of year. Netflix is like the fire hose effect, and they still haven't had a big hit. It's not like it was competing against the latest Extraction movie or something.
Right. Nothing. And, you know, I go back to Ryan Gosling, who I love, right? But, you know, he has momentum coming off of the Barbie movie. But, you know, as far as Ryan Gosling goes, he's a star, yes. Is he a star to drive butts in seats? Maybe not. Like, I look at his career, and it's like up until The Nice Guys, which was more of a comedy semi-action in it. He's not an he's not known for an action guy per se, right, until like late in his career with The Gray Man really kicked that off. Blade Runner, and then this movie.
Yeah.
Up until then, you know, he did stuff like Drive and Lars and the Real Girl and all that kind of Place Beyond the Pines. Yeah. So like he's an actor. Now transforming to an action guy. So I don't know, man. Like he has charm and charisma and he's funny. I'm shocked. I literally am like, and Emily Blunt's great. So I'm shocked, especially with the reviews coming out. Like you said, critically, like, oh, this is like a good movie. It's going to be one of the best of the summer. I'm blown away and honestly don't know what to say about the $28 million open. Like, I honestly don't have an answer for it.
Right. I mean, to me, so here we go. This is where it's going to get fun. And this is where Shane starts really kicking my ass. So I'm watching the movie and then I'm thinking back to the trailer a lot while I'm watching the movie, because I'm thinking like, did the trailer get all the fun stuff? Did, you know, how did the trailer position this movie? Because now that I see how the plot unfolds and how the story really unfolds, I'm like, what did the trailer say to us going in that maybe people were hesitant about? And then we can go into like how the payoff was with the actual movie. But now seeing the movie and thinking about the trailer, I was like, did the trailer really tell us a lot about like what this is or what this is about? Because quite frankly, when I was watching the movie, I was just like, yeah, now I could see why the trailer seems messy, because I think some of the actual movie is messy. So I know I'm really starting to tee off here, but, and again, I want to say before we get into everything, I liked the movie, just didn't love it. Okay. I thought it has problems and we'll get into them all. But I think part of the reason why this failed is because that trailer failed.
See, as many times as we watched the trailer, I thought I had a good idea of what it was going to be, right? Him sending in to find the actor of the movie that went missing, and then all chaos breaks out. That's what I kind of got. So I wasn't like, did the trailer mislead me? Because that's happened a lot to us. Sure. Like, oh, this didn't represent the movie that I fucking saw.
Yeah, imaginary.
We say that a lot. Yeah. And it's just a list. But this one, I kind of had an idea, and it kind of, yeah, it got a little sideways at times. But like overall, like I got what I wanted out of, like it did. Like I said, I was fine with the movie based on the trailer that I saw. I wasn't like, oh man, I feel misled or
right,
you know, whatever.
Yeah, I just think like thinking about the trailer, it didn't show like even what you said is not much of a story. It's like, well, why right, would a stuntman would be hunting down, like trying to find a guy, especially when the way the movie unfolds, it's like, fucking hates this guy. And I understand they show the motivations as it goes along, but like, it's like, it just didn't seem like that grabby. But what's supposed to be grabby is, oh, huge stunts, you know, and all this like huge action, because it's David Leitch. But then I'm like, is Ryan Gosling that guy? And I was just like, and maybe so people maybe are thinking, this might be thinking too hard, but just Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt, who's not fully known for doing action, is headlining a blockbuster action movie. So, because I was thinking about like, okay, well, what did The Beekeeper do opening weekend, right? Where you're just like
16.
Right. And, you know, and then again, like, what did Bullet Train do? And it's like, well, so that's Brad Pitt. Is Brad Pitt just a smidge bigger of a star that was coming off of Lost City and I don't know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. There was like, he was like kind of in the resurgence of Brad Pitt. So, you know, I don't want to overstate that. He's still Brad Pitt no matter what. But like, you know, it was something to where I was like, okay, I guess it makes a little sense that he drove a movie to be a little above this. But an August movie, you know, with not much besides Brad Pitt in that movie. I mean, there was a lot of like lesser stars. But still,
do you see I think the common denominator is, and I don't mean to throw this guy under the bus, but you know, Aaron Taylor Johnson was in that movie as well.
Yeah,
maybe he's the problem.
Yeah, it's totally not David Leitch. Because I don't think people care about David Leitch. honestly. And honestly, I think because, again, he works a lot in franchise and whatever, I think he's just a guy. He's like a solid guy, you know, like he can direct action, you know. So, and I get, yeah. And the stunt stuff is going to be top notch because that was his bag. So, but to me, like, I just wonder if people just went like, I don't know, it looks fine, you know, and then just kind of like waited and see. So here's what I ask you before we get into the movie itself for kind of like a final look at this or whatever. You think this movie has legs because it's got critical stuff where like maybe people are like, no, go see it, it's fun or whatever.
I honestly thought about that today too, because I'm thinking what's gonna, you know, what's on its tails here in the next couple weeks.
I think it has got a week to prove it, you know.
Well, I'm just saying, you got the Apes and you got Furiosa coming out, so yeah. Like, you know, you got two big movies coming out here pretty soon. Yeah. I think it has a chance to have some legs going against the Ape movie. I don't know how that movie is going to perform. We're getting into it later, but I think Furiosa is going to dust it. So I think it might have some time to crawl along, but we'll. I don't feel good about it.
Well, I'll tell you this too. I didn't investigate too hard, but my thought was this movie probably had IMAX screens this past weekend, and I'm willing to bet they're going to lose them all to Apes this weekend.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So them getting that little extra money and underperforming, and then you got competition coming up, that doesn't spell very good. This could be a tragedy real quick.
Yeah.
Because
I think so.
I forgot, did you read what the budget was on this one? I feel like it was triple digits.
It was like 130, I think.
Yeah,
somewhere around there.
If this movie makes its money back, and I'm by that I mean like double.
Yeah, because they marketed the hell out of this movie.
Yeah, because between the marketing, you know, like I said, there was fucking Super Bowl ads and shit, and like Gosling was everywhere. You couldn't market this movie more, I think.
Yeah,
and I think again that was part of it too. Like, you know, like Gosling killed SNL. That was huge too. Like, everything was working its way. I am so stunned by this number. And so the fact that we're at 65 after the first weekend, taking international to account, this movie definitely has to hit 300 total.
It's not going to get there.
So, because I'm probably putting it at, if it hits what its budget was, I'd be surprised. It's like probably right there.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I'm guessing it, when it's all said and done, around 150 total, 150 to 160, maybe.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, I think Bullet Train hit above that.
Yeah.
So, but again, that came out in August. It might have a little bit of a leeway in a soft month going into the fall season. So, I don't know. The only thing, like you said, and we can discuss that maybe later. Even as a fan of the Apes movie, like, I don't really care about a fourth.
Yeah.
And they already moved it off the Memorial Day and moved it up, which was interesting. So, because I guess it didn't want to compete against Garfield, and I don't blame them. You know, monkeys and cats can't get along. So, I don't know, man. This summer is already off to a weird start, and it's only going to get weirder. But it's something that I just kind of wanted to put out there, because I think it's going to be a story up until we get to Deadpool Wolverine and then see what happens with that. But, you know, there's a lot of things like that have to hit for the box office to work this summer. And unfortunately, it's relying more on animated kids movies now than it is Marvel or any of these other big things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because quite frankly, Garfield, Inside Out 2, and Despicable Me 4 are probably going to make way more money than any of the things that we just said.
Well, listen, man, Kung Fu Panda 4 opened up to like 74.
I know.
Over its first weekend.
Yeah, it made a lot of money.
What does that say, you know?
I know you didn't put it in the upper tier of Dune and Godzilla, but it probably deserved to be. It's probably number three. I mean, I'd have to look.
It is number three. Yeah, it is number three, because I did take a look at it. Number four is like Ghostbusters. That opened up at like 45.
Yeah, and you know what number five was? The Bob Marley biopic, which I was like, I thought that movie bombed. Nope.
Right?
Did not. But, all right. You seem to like this movie a little better than me, so I will open it up with you, sir. Like I said, it is getting solid critical returns. what did you think of the movie overall? Like, what were this for a lot of my friends who are like, this was just a fun time at the movies. I don't want to be like the poo-poo guy, but you know, I'm curious. You seem more in that camp.
I was in that camp again because I was looking forward to it, so my bar was set high. Did it reach the bar? It fell a little bit short, right? But yeah, maybe I was smitten with the chemistry between Blunt and Gosling, and I thought Winston Duke was good in this movie too. I liked when he was paired up with Ryan Gosling. I thought they made a good duo, yeah. Right? I kind of took it for what it was. I didn't get lost in the whole, let's pin it on the plot the way they perceived it. I don't know if you want, you know, I don't want to, I'm trying not to talk spoilers, but like once we find out like why he got to Australia and what the producer's using him for, a little of that was a little muddled, and I thought the movie kind of was a tad too long. I thought they could have wrapped it up a little shorter, made it a little tighter.
Yep. And that's a David Leitch thing, by the way. I want to kind of put that out there as like a thing, because I think since Atomic Blonde, every movie has like inched up in runtime as we've gone along. And this one, I think, was 207, I think they listed it as, and I felt it.
It did, and it was better served as like 145 to 150. Yeah. You know, I thought they could have tightened some things up. But overall, like you said, the action sequences worked for me. There were some, you know, funny bits in there that worked for me, and there were some that didn't work. Like I liked the French, the dog that took the French commands. Yeah, I did like that part, mm-hmm. You know. And I like Gosling's character overall. And Emily Blunt, and like I said, Winston Duke, but like, it just kind of Aaron Taylor Johnson. I was like, okay, whatever. Like I didn't feel either way about his role or his character in this movie, but he does play a good douche. Like yeah. He did play a good douchebag. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just, overall I did. It accomplished what I wanted it to accomplish in the fact that my kids liked it. I was entertained, and again, call it the Gosling effect. I was entertained. It did what a summer movie was supposed to do for me without me trying to overthink everything in the movie.
Right.
I was a little more forgiving, and I'll be honest with you. I was a little biased, and I was a little forgiving with certain aspects of the movie.
Listen, I went in with full steam ahead. I wanted this movie to be like, we could do this without Marvel. If Marvel's going to shoot the bed, let's make fun movies like this. I was all the way in, and I'd say about an hour into the movie, I turned to the person I was with and was like, this movie's kind of messy, isn't it? And they're like, yeah, but I'm having fun. And so yeah, I think I think people just recognize it, but forgive it because of the charm offensive. And you're absolutely right. And this movie, I think, much like Bullet Train, where that movie has the feeling of like a pretty good action movie that you could just ride with because of people like Brad Pitt. But that movie was messy as hell, too. Yeah. And ultimately, it was kind of like whenever Brad Pitt wasn't on screen and started leaning on other people, you were kind of like, okay. You know, like what's funny is that I thought Aaron Taylor Johnson and who was his, it was Brian Tyree Henry, him and they were, quote, brothers or something, yeah. Right, in that movie. I thought they actually propped up the movie when things went sideways. And now Aaron Taylor Johnson in this one, I thought he had moments. I liked it when he was doing the grappling thing with his stunt double and like that first thing came along because I was like, this is goofy and I like this. But I think the movie didn't fully know what to do with his character, especially as like he kind of came back into play and or the other villains involved, if you want to call that. I think they just didn't know what to do. And what's the issue with me is that they hid the football so long with what the quote reveal was, which seemed fairly obvious, honestly, yeah. From the beginning, because they didn't introduce any other alternative idea. So it's like for it to be like kind of mysterious, that didn't really work for me. And the actual quote villains didn't really work for me either, because they're not villains, they're just idiots. And to have like, so most of the movie is just like Ryan Gosling messing around with goon squads that like have no effect. They're just nameless, faceless. And then they try to attach a name at one point, which that's part of the thing as I was watching this. Like there were scenes in here where I was like, something clearly got edited out, because I could see the seams where I was like, oh, they're talking about this character like we already got introduced to him, but we didn't. and or you seem familiar with it, but you didn't actually introduce him. So it was like a bunch of weird things. Like basically that guy who's kind of like the red haired brute or whatever that
Big
he
red,
fight.
Yeah,
that he fights sort of. He talks about him like they're ultra familiar, which maybe he is because he was a long time, you know, stuntman for the actor he was seeking down, and that was part of his entourage. But they don't really play with that. They don't really show it. So I kind of got lost in that. But you're right. Gosling and Blunt have serious chemistry, and the film tries its best to get them together. But what this movie probably needed is just for them to actually do shit together. Because, like, there's so many scenes of, like, all right, we'll set up this romance, but then we're going to separate you for long stretches. And the movie suffers when Gosling's kind of, like, on his own. Because he doesn't always have that second person with him all the time. He's kind of just aimless into the dark. And Gosling's career, to me, Gosling works better when he's working with somebody else in tandem to where he can bounce his charm off of. And like think of, you know, and you mentioned Winston Duke, but that's not consistent.
Right.
And like there's many times where he's just by himself because they need it to, because they kind of do, again, more hiding the football, trying to create mystery or intrigue in this plot. But I don't know. It doesn't quite work. He has like a minute with Stephanie Hsu, you know, an Oscar nominated actress who does 6 minutes in this movie. That probably is some of the best stuff. That Against All Odds garbage truck sequence was the best thing in the whole movie.
I agree. Yeah, that scene was fantastic.
Yeah, like them inside that garbage receptacle while it's sparking up in the street, spinning around while she's singing Against All Odds was like the best. That was like, this movie has arrived finally, but I was like, and then it goes off and does less. And then tries to wrap up. So that's my thing about the whole movie. There was a lack of momentum and direction a lot of the time. And the more I think about David Leitch is what I think was the problem more often than not. But I also think that I think if Gosling and Blunt are best together, this movie not really putting them together until like the last bits. And even then it's not fully together. Is a crime because of how good they were when they were together.
Yeah, no, I agree with your point there. Like I said, they were the best part. They made the movie go. I mean, they did. But I do wish they would have had more scenes when they were actually together, like you said, together.
I think Gosling needed a second, like when she's not there.
Right. See, I didn't mind Gosling by himself too much, you know, because again, I think he... For me, anyway, he pulls those scenes off. Like, I don't know, man. Like, he's funny. Like, and he's not funny, like, in a traditional kind of funny way. He's funny, like, I compare him to, like, Chris Hemsworth funny. Like, he's kind of witty in his timing and the way he, like, says his lines is funny.
Sure.
But he's not known for, like, a funny guy.
Right.
So, you know, I thought he carried, like, and he did enough for me in this movie to carry, even though he was by himself. Like I said, I don't know, man. I guess I was more forgiving overall at this movie. And it's funny, you mentioned at the top, like the connection to the original Fall Guy. There's only three connections. The names, Colt and Jody, were in the original one. And the truck that he drives with the dog, that was in the original Fall Guy. Other than that,
but it's like the updated version of said truck.
Yeah, it's like the updated version of said truck. But, you know, old school body design. But anyway, that I wanted to get it out there for those who probably don't even remember there was a Fall Guy show because...
It's fucking 40 years old or more.
1981.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's weird. And to put Lee Majors in this movie at the very end, I was like, really? Like, you basically took the whole movie to do nothing with it. And now Lee Majors. And I believe the woman who was in there, too, who probably played Jody. That there was another woman with him. I assume that's the same person. But I really only know Lee Majors by sight. So apologies.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So... you know, again, this made me think, like, where does Ryan Gosling go from here? It's just...
He's going to do whatever, because he's always done whatever. I just think, I wonder if people are going to see him less as, like, a bankable by himself commodity. Yeah, he needs to be in some ensemble or some franchisey thing. He's serviceable, he'll put some butts in seats, but it seems like not in this, you know, consistent level. But the problem is like, how many of these type of movies do we get where it's like, quote unquote, sort of original IP-ish, but not really, you know,
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know. Like, you go and look at him, like you said, his biggest hits were when he was part of an ensemble or part of a duo. Like, La La Land, it was him and Emma Stone. And
Nice Guys or Russell
Crowe. Nice Guys, him and Russell Crowe. Yeah. But, you know, strangely enough, the movie I fell in love with Ryan Gosling was 2011's Drive, where it's basically just him. I mean, there was other people in the movie, but that was a solo Ryan Gosling movie.
Yeah.
And I love that movie. That's where I got on the Ryan Gosling train and haven't been off ever since. But even go back to Crazy Stupid Love. That's an ensemble movie, yep. Man.
And like, Blade Runner's IP with Blade Harrison Runner. Ford. So he's got that, yeah, too. So I think he just needs to live in that lane where it's not him as his kind of sole reason why a movie lives or dies.
Right. I agree with that.
I think he needs, I know, is insulting to Emily Blunt, but so is the movie, frankly, because, like, again, it's not their movie, it's his movie, like 67%, and she's the other third, you know.
Right. I agree.
So, but that's their design, and I wonder, I don't know, this is why I was like surprised that it's getting as good a return, because I thought some critics would have kind of taken to task. Even just for me, just going, this is edited like a bag of ass. Like, just how am I seeing this and nobody's like really riding on that movie at all? Because, like, this is a very frivolous movie. A lot of times critics love to take the chum of that and just, you know, the low hanging fruit and just go with it.
I think they're like me. They were just, you know, they had their blinders on. I don't know. Yeah. Like, they're just overcome with the charm of the two stars,
I guess. Or maybe because this movie, I believe, went to South by Southwest fresh off the Oscar, wave of I'm Just Ken and all this other stuff. And when they heard that people liked it, they just didn't want to be the people who are like, what? So, again, right. I liked parts of this movie. I think certain things worked. I agreed with a lot of the things you said. I just think it's like a 3.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where
I went a little higher than you.
Yeah. Where I'm sure people, like, again, I said it had a 3.6 on Letterboxd, where I just think that's a little high, but you're probably right there.
I'm right there. I gave it a 3.5.
Yeah. So, again, that's what I wanted to put out there. I was like, it has problems. I still liked it enough, and it's still a top 10 movie of the year, soft part of the year, but, like, you know, it's going to do what it's going to do. I was just way more shocked at the numbers.
Me too.
On the critics being too high and the box office being too low, which those things don't usually happen unless it's an Oscar movie.
Right.
So what happened here is where I keep losing my mind. And I think it's, I don't know. I honestly look back at the trailer and I go, oh, well, part of it is in the trailer too. I wanted to put this out there. This movie needed a score versus playing the same fucking 80s songs over again. Just putting that out there. It was annoying after the first few times. I was like, oh, cool. It's like setting the mood. And then I was like, how many times are we going to do the same song? How many times?
It was a lot. I did notice that too.
So I thought they were spinning their wheels, and that's where I started to lose it. And also, Hannah Waddingham, if she's not blonde, I don't know what to do with her.
I said Ted Lasso's
too big, you fucked up.
I saw that when I saw the trailer. I'm like, she looks terrible.
It doesn't work
like at all. Like, she looks like a different person.
Yeah.
Because she's, and we've said,
they didn't know what to do with her character at all.
Yeah, she's hot in Ted Lasso, man.
Yeah.
And this one, she's not.
I think they wanted her to be a boss bitch, but I'm like, you already have the boss bitch already carved out in Ted Lasso. You just got to amp it up a bit. I don't know.
Yeah, she looked terrible. Anyway, she looked terrible with that hair. So.
Yeah, it was weird. I assumed it was a wig because...
Yeah, it was a wig. Yeah,
because it didn't look right on her head a little bit too. But yeah, man, I just wish this just had a consistent narrative, a consistent drive where, like, and they weren't like hiding the enemy. I think if they were just more obvious, at least to the audience, what's going on, and let, like, you know, Colt Seavers or whatever just kind of figure it out, you know, and then Emily Blunt can join in at some point. The weird part is because they tried doing this meta thing by doing a movie inside a movie plus all, it seemed too busy. Like, there's so much, and especially, again, if you want Blunt and Gosling, you have them, but you don't. So that's where I was like, I wish this movie had more of them.
Right. I see all your points and they were valid.
Yeah.
Again, I was just a tad more forgiving with this movie.
I think we could use at least four more times where he got set on fire and thrown into that rock. But I'm glad we were at least close. I was afraid you were going to be like, no, this is like a 4.5 or whatever.
No,
you're like,
no, no.
You're like, Boy Kills World was something. But Fall Guy, on the other hand, which again, totally valid in a Shane universe that can happen. Let's get to Shogun. How about that?
Let's do it.
We could do it. I want you to lead on this one, buddy, because you were driving this train for weeks. You were every week just going, God, just catch up. I want you to catch up. This is so good. This is so good. And, you know, just driving that that train. And obviously, critically, it seems like every podcast who covers TV that I listen to just loved Shogun. And I'm right there, baby. Like, I caught up with this. I binged a lot of it. John Blackthorne, I think I said this to you in our messages about it as I was wrapping it up, because you were already done. So I felt open sending you like messages and stuff. But I was just like, when Tornaga says I kept John Blackthorne around because he was entertaining, I'm like, that is the whole show to me right there. I was like, that's the whole show. So, and to me, that's what makes me smile about it. That makes me like it. We could talk about the end a little bit, because I think that's where it loses like ultimate status, but I really like the show.
Yeah, and I think I messaged you when you were a couple episodes behind. I said, listen, man, when I got done, I think I shot you a message right away. And I said, listen, I think people are going to not like the ending of this show. I think it's going to divide a lot of people, because it leads you, and we'll talk about it, but it leads you into the Crimson Sky and like this big battle royale. Yeah. And oh, shit, it's going to happen. Well, not so fast, my friends.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the way it played out, I understood it and I appreciated it, and it did not change the way I feel about the show overall.
Right.
And in fact, I kind of like they went with the route they did go, because it kind of took some hushpa, as they say.
Yeah, sure.
To kind of do that, you know, because again, I didn't read the source material, so maybe it is like closer to the book, but this was like a thinking man's strategic kind of show, and I love the back and forth, the chess game that
Toranaga
Toranaga played the whole time. Like, it was, there were some intense scenes, like you said, the one with his old friend that he ended up doing harikiri to himself.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, crap, like that was intense. Yeah, man, like I was like, oh, is he gonna call his bluff? Oh shit, he like it,
yeah
just crazy. First of all, if I'm living in that, like, there's no way I'm taking my life like that. I'm just saying that right now. Like,
yeah,
there's just no way. So that takes some guts. But no, this show was just well done, well produced, well thought out. The director said he got what he wanted in the first season, the only season that we're going to have. And I can see his point. We get into the Blackthorne character, too, because I liked his transformation ultimately. Yeah. Like, he did. He adapted that culture, and there's an episode where he had a chance to get his crew back, and he realized, like, this is kind of how I acted, and they're a bunch of douches.
Right.
Like, you know, I don't want to be part of that culture anymore. And I think you mentioned Old Man Blackthorne, and that threw me for a loop, that whole scene, because I'm like, why are we watching that scene now? But I think it goes back to the line say his name again.
Toranaga
said, he goes, when he's like, I think his fate, he'll always be here. To me, the only reason why they showed that scene is like, he's back in England. He got out of Japan, so it wasn't his fate. I think that's the only reason why they showed that scene. Now, as far as the necklace goes, and we'll get into it, I don't know how he retrieved that from the bottom of the ocean there. But
yeah,
well done show, man. Like, you know, we'll get into like the scenes. I like Toriaga's son, how he met his demise. I actually laughed out loud at that scene, because I'm like, what a little...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, what a little crap, man.
Yeah.
But no, the tension that it builds, and it, like you said, when you were watching, it's like at the end of every episode, you're waiting for it. And you're like, oh, I didn't get it yet, but I'm going to get it next episode. And it just kind of keeps you amped up, and it does a great job, great writing. So
yeah,
it's a hard show to compare to like Fallout and The Gentlemen. But for me, overall, as a scope of a show, it's probably my favorite show. I'm not saying that because it's recently biased because I've seen it for a while now, but yeah. I do think it's like ultimately the best show of the year so far.
Oh, I think so. And obviously we're soon to the midway point, and we'll probably end up doing like a top five show or whatever the thing right. may or like a best of so far kind of an episode. And I would be shocked if this gets knocked off. Although I keep forgetting, like, The Bear is so close to coming back. And I'm like, man, is that going to drop? Because it usually drops binge. And we're going to be like, hold up one second. Forgot the greatest right. show on television right now is about to, like, grab the mic. So let's see. But I agree with you. This show had all the momentum in the world going into the last episode. And I think that's why I kind of was just a little deflated. It's one of those, like, an admirable ending that makes sense given the characters, but it's one of those like, but God, this wasn't quite what was promised, so to speak, though.
Right.
Like, especially as you went along, there was some good, really quality, like, action scenes in this show. It kind of just did all of its talking early in that regard, because you had like the cannon test stuff, that was amazing. The battle in the forest was incredible, like where they were hiding, kind of like trying to leave under the cover of darkness, and got shot with like flaming arrows and had those fights. That was great. And then obviously there was some other treachery stuff that caused into, like, you know, a lot of sword battles and hand-to-hand stuff and whatever, and those were all done very well, which is why I thought, like, God damn, you just wait until we get to the last episode, and then you kind of just have to see it for what it is. And so that's why I'm like, yeah, I get it, but man, that's tough. I know,
we wanted it, yeah.
And it still kind of did the disease of what, especially because this is a one and done, it kind of felt like they were like, we're going to have to do the Return of the King ending, where it's like seven different endings or whatever, you know, like just keep compiling. Let's get every main character that survives final say here before we get out. But that happens a lot. I don't want to hold it.
Right.
And quite frankly, if we are holding up against the Gentleman or something like that, The Gentleman did the same thing. It was where, like, yeah, we don't know if this is one and done, and they kind of tease more, but yeah. It's interesting that also kind of wrapped up everybody's storylines and tried to see where it's going to go forward and where the business is going. Like, all the stuff kind of got, like, neatly tied up enough, you know, while also teasing more. But this is definitely the best show so far. And you're right. Like, the chess match, the treachery, the trickery, all those things are what makes this show. So for the ending to also be another form of, like, here's how the trickery unfolds, it felt like simultaneously, like, true to the show, but also, yeah, like, I would have liked to see that actually happen.
Right.
So I'm like, could they not get 12 episodes or whatever it was? Like, we couldn't do this in 13 old school style. So that was the only thing where I was like, oh man, that would have been kind of cool, you know?
Yeah,
but that's the only thing where I was like, oh, we're gonna get an explainer ending. I like, you know, I'd rather see than be shown, you know, so that, or yeah, whatever that is. But so other than that, yeah, I'm weighing, man. This is a high level, high quality show that gave me, I think I said to you along the way, I don't think you were a big Game of Thrones person, right?
I was up until like the last two seasons.
Okay. Yeah. So what's interesting is these 10 episodes kind of felt very Game of Thrones-ish in all the ways, where it's like people were a little unsatisfied about the end, but they still kind of get it. And as a whole, like, it's still a legendary kind of show. And so it kind of got all the feelings of Game of Thrones all within it, just less incest and backbiting, I guess. I don't know. Right. So a lot right, less sexual stuff, which is funny because it's like, you know, in and out of brothels or tea houses, whatever we want to call them.
Tea houses.
Yeah. And what they call them instead of prostitutes, consorties or consort something.
Yeah.
Consorts. Consorts.
Consorts.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. There you go. So I almost wanted to use almost every, because they just never are vulgar. Like, outside of, like, the first couple episodes where it's, like, boiling a man alive and writing a poem or something, where I was like, this show's fucked. Like, it that, it didn't hold that energy going into when it got serious and all that stuff. But they love to throw, like, terms out there that are just, like, the smooth posturing version of, like, just something that's down and dirty. In the year,
pillowing.
Yeah, pillowing is my favorite thing, which I told you what I,
yeah, you did.
It made me think of 30 Rock, where it was like James Franco and his Asian sex pillow, where it's like, you're being such a non-pillow right now. It's like, I would be yelling that at all the prostitutes. It was so great. But yeah, top notch, and we'll see where it,
we
see where it lands. But yeah, if you, you out there have not heard of this show, have not seen this show, yeah. No, regardless of whatever we may say about the finale, there's no reason to not watch this show. If you're like a action or a Game of Thrones or any of these type of things, it is a perfect show right now to binge and watch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I, you know, while it's in my brain, the other scene that I really love towards the tail end is I love Mary Kou when she's trying to leave the Shudu's city.
Yeah.
And they're shooting arrows at her feet and she keeps walking forward. I was like, oh, man, like that, that whole scene was just fantastic. Yeah. And that actress nailed that part.
She's terrific. She's
terrific, man. And she was in Monarch, the Apple show. She was like one of the leads in that show. Yeah.
All right.
And so was Ishidu. Ishidu played her dad on that show.
Oh, interesting. I didn't even think they had that kind of age differential. But, you know, that's a, you know, tip of the hat to him. Because, you know, surrounded by older Asian gentlemen, and he seemed like the young guy. So, good
right,
on him.
Right.
Yeah.
But, no, I agree, man. Best show of the year so far. We'll see. Like you said, when The Bear comes out and other stuff. But it's going to be hard because, again, we're comparing different shows. But overall, man, this show delivered on everything.
One last question, barring Shogun. The guy, when they had that little, the guys who kind of ran things, the little group that kind of ran everything.
Oh, right. The council.
Yeah, the council. The guy who basically looked like a lizard. Did it mess with you every single time where you're just like, Jesus, this guy looked like he's turning into a snake every week?
It was funny you say that because like the first time we see him, he's all like covered up. He has like this little thing around him. And it's like progressively like, now we're going to lose the face shield. We're going to lose the outer layer.
Yeah. And you're just,
and
like,
he's just sitting there like King Lizard. Yeah. I'm like, oh, no, man.
It's the only thing that took me out. I was like, oh, my God. No one's going to say anything.
It was funny, man.
Yeah.
I get that because they did. They started him hidden. And it's like, whoop, now we're just going to keep showing more and more of him.
In a show that's only 10 episodes, that was like, oh, my God, we're going for this. Amazing.
Agreed.
So I'm glad you like that too. All right. Before we get out of here, did you want to kind of do the wrap up of some other things that you can kind of just do thumbs up, thumbs down, whatever with some streaming things? I mean, I'll kick it off with Unfrosted. That was my review, my Netflix review for the week for what's on Netflix. You and I both saw it. We both kind of talked about it. This is, if you had to do thumbs up or thumbs down, it's a down. Because it's got some jokes in it, but ultimately Jerry Seinfeld doing a Pop-Tart origin story thing is weirdly just like a bland, mostly just over-polished, over-saccharine, not very cinematic, just kind of there. Like it had so many cameos that you were just like, this is what they were trying to like shine it up with, but there's like not enough jokes or not enough momentum in the story that I gave a shit.
Yeah, I agree. It just was not good. Like you said, I don't care how many cameos they had in this movie, it didn't make it any better.
Yeah.
Because everything kind of fell flat. And I had a couple of people like, well, it was supposed to be that way. I'm like, no, I don't care if a movie's over the top. It has to be funny.
Yeah.
And this one was not.
Yeah. You could be hammy. That's fine. This movie should have been closer to like the humor of like a Get Smart or Airplane or like any of those type of like goofy, or like, you know, Naked Gun-ish, Police Squad, that kind of stuff. Like, make it really hammy. Just make it absurdist. Like, because you're not, no one cares about the origin, like the actual history. And honestly, watching the movie, they didn't either. So like, make it even goofier. But I think it just simply just wasn't funny enough.
No, it wasn't. I agree.
Yeah. But you watched a couple other ones over the weekend that either are now hitting streaming or some like barely hanging on in theaters. So let's start because for my fascination, the Nicolas Cage film Arcadian. I saw the trailer for this. I barely even remember being in theaters. I guess you're saying it still kind of is maybe near you. But you saw this one. So what
I did is
how'd you
playing on one screen. I noticed it's on Prime. So I was like, well, let me see how much this is for rental. Cause it's still in theaters. And it was like $5.99. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, sure.
It got good reviews critically. It was doing well critically. Honestly, this is a nicely done, tight survivalist movie with Nicolas Cage and his two sons who grew up in this Arcadian Mountain region. And he's trying to like take care of his sons. Cause at night, all these creatures come out, or this creature comes out, I should say. And it's just them trying to survive in the land that they have. But the movie really kind of quickly kind of misleads you. Cause yes, there are creatures in this movie, but it really is about the two brothers, twins, and they're the ways they are getting separated in life. Cause one is like, trying to protect the land and is still with his dad and doing everything he says. The other one kind of wants to explore and be free of his family and kind of like right. just get out of there. So it focuses on that dynamic really well. And it's a independent film. And some of the shots they use in this movie, there's a part where they explode a house and they all hide. Like the camera angles and what they did in the scenes were really well done.
Okay.
And the creature itself I thought was pretty – it was hard to describe what it was because they traveled because there's packs of them. You ever throw a tire down a hill and it rolls?
Yeah.
Well, that's how they travel. There's like 50 of these things in like a tire, and they would just like jump off and go get people.
Interesting.
But they were like wolves slash I don't even know what they were, dogs slash ostriches. They looked weird. But they worked, man. I had a good time. An hour and 25 minute movie, so it moved fast. I gave it a 3.5. I thought it's well worth the $5.99.
Wow.
Really well done. So that was a thumbs up for me on Arcadian.
If you had to compare, because like when I saw the trailer, I was like, this feels like just yet another post A Quiet Place story that feels more akin to like that. What was the Hulu Fox one that was like the alien one that was the silent movie we had?
No one
will save you or something like it was
called. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so
that's it.
So there's like those type of movies. There's a bunch where it's just like we're trapped. There's these creatures that come out for a specific reason. We either can't talk or we can't like come out at night or some reason. Like it's just, it feels like we're all in still in that post Quiet Place time, including or presently, because we're going to get another one this summer.
Right. It is akin more to No One Will Save You or strangely enough, It Comes at Night, which sure. didn't have a creature in it, but it had that feel to it.
Uh-huh.
Because again, they switch it to focusing on the family. So they give you an indication of why, maybe why the creatures are there, but they never like dive into that mythology. Like, okay, this is what happened to Earth and this is why right. they're here now. We're already set in that world. So they don't really go back and like dig up that story. It's really a family unit. And that's kind of what I liked about it. Once I realized what it was, I'm like, okay, I could get to it because
right.
the two brothers played by Jaden Marshall, who was in It. And Knives Out in Mr. Harrigan's Phone, and Maxwell Jenkins, who was Thomas in Lost in Space, and he plays the young Reacher in the Reacher series. Uh-huh. I thought them two did really well, man. Like, it was a well done movie. So, okay. Yes, don't get tired of the post apocalyptic creature
yeah.
world kind of thing. It was well done.
All right. Sounds good. You also had.
The Society
for Magical Negroes.
Magical Negroes, yes, right?
Yeah, and you said that came out on Peacock?
Peacock, yeah. Yes. Just came out on Peacock this weekend.
And I will set the table a little bit. My curiosity here is I believe, without looking at it, it had something as low as a 2.7 on IMDb, which is alarming. So, and I wanted to know, is, you know, because it got like mediocre critical scores, but nothing to where it was like, fuck this movie energy. And that's, that score is fuck this movie energy. So where do you stand on this movie?
Yeah, the movie is sitting at 3.2 on IMDb.
Okay.
Which
so maybe kinda, more people oh, saw no, it over sorry. The weekend.
It's 3.0 now. Okay, 3.0.
Yeah.
I will honestly say it's not a great movie. I don't know why people or critics hated on this, or people, I should say, not even critics, because they scored it higher, hated this movie so much. It is messy. The writing isn't great. I like the possibility of the world they set up with the society that they have and the magic aspect of this movie. Mm-hmm. But the problem is they don't delve into that world enough. They set it up. You kind of got like a history, but they didn't really dive into it. And especially with the main character that Alan Greer, what's his name?
David Alan Greer
yeah. recruits into society. I thought David Alan Greer was fine as a straight guy, the old guy.
I believe that Justice Smith is the lead, right?
It is. And he was good.
I like him.
He was a good lead. But this movie is just basically they take the magic society, the Negroes, and they wrap it up into what's supposed to be a rom-com, right? Mm-hmm. That's the basis of the movie. But the problem was it wasn't funny, and it really wasn't romantic as well.
Okay.
there were moments in this movie that I'm like, okay, it's okay. But, man, I got done watching afterward. I'm like, it's not a 3.0. Like, I would give it a 2 to a 2.5, which isn't great, but it's not like a 1. Like, given the choice between this, Lisa Frankenstein, and Unfrosted, I'm going to watch this movie again. Like, I'll watch this before I watch those other movies.
Well, I was about to say, I looked up Madame Web's score on IMDb, and it's a 3.8, which is higher than this movie. And I'm like, why are people so mad?
Yeah, I would watch this movie before Madame Web again. Again, it was disjointed because I felt like it didn't know what it ultimately wanted to be. So it like pulled threads in different directions and never really connected them enough for me.
Yeah.
So if that makes any sense, the writing was all over the place. It just was like, should we be rom-com? Should we be magic? We don't know how to like really interweave the two concepts.
But is it racially divisive enough that people would just like troll this movie?
No.
Okay.
To be honest with you, no. I didn't see that in this movie, okay. You know?
Yeah.
Now, I guess conceptually, some white people be like, oh, man, I can't believe it. Because there are some moments in this movie like, should I take offense to that? No.
Right.
Like, I didn't because I just knew what it was.
Right.
But, yeah, it wasn't like a movie like, oh, I can't believe they're doing it. No, it wasn't. No.
Okay.
To answer your question, no.
Okay. Fair enough. Was that it for you? I forgot.
Challengers.
Oh, you caught up.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Caught up.
And now with your face, I'm very scared. So hit me, buddy. This is my number two movie of the year, so let me down easy.
No. It's in my top five for the year.
Okay.
It was a very excellent movie. I echo just about everything you said about this movie. Zendaya was great. Though her character ultimately in this movie, I you're not meant to like her, and I didn't. And
in fact, it's hard to like anybody, quite frankly, but you kind of understand it as it moves along. But
you do.
It's just ultra competition to the highest level.
It is. And I do like the inside world about what makes one player great and one player kind of like just shuffle along. And you said that last week. And it just like really magnifies that in this movie. It's like what could have been wasted talent.
Yeah.
You know, like you never grew up. So ultimately, I really did like this movie. I don't know how I feel about the ultimate ending of this movie with him doing the sign on the tennis racket and like,
I saw it coming too.
I know. I did too. I'm like, what the hell? So now I guess they're friends now. I'm like, come on, really? And she's like, yes. Like, for everything that happened and how mad, I don't know. It's just like the ending just seemed like, I don't know how to wrap this movie up. So let's just kind of wrap it up this way.
Yeah.
I don't know, but ultimately it had me. I like you said, I love the soundtrack.
Oh yeah,
the inside world of the tennis had me. The two actors are really good too, man. Even though I was in Team Donaldson for this movie because I just felt like he was the puppet in this movie,
yeah.
Like doing what Zendaya wanted.
Yeah, it's hard not to
the entire time. Yeah. Right, but yeah, go see this movie, man. It's in my top five. I ended up scoring it. I think I scored it a 4. I want to say I gave it a 4 or 4 or 5. I was in that camp.
Okay. So, yeah, we're right there then. Yeah. For all my posturing last week, I did ultimately give it 4.5 and put it under Dune. So, for anyone who is worried if I was still doing that, which that's nobody, but I figured I'd chime in and say, as far as my letterboxing is concerned, it is my number two movie of the year officially and not tied for first or anything.
And I do think it's the director's best movie of his catalog. So far.
Yeah, it's hard to argue. Yeah. I mean, Suspiria was a little nutty, you know, Call Me By Your Name is its thing, but it's a very specific type of, you know, movie for people to wrap its arms around. I think this is his most accessible film,
Yeah.
And but does a lot of the things that he's great at. So I think it's kind of the best of both worlds.
And it's like you said, like the way they do it, it's like you start present, but then you go 2 weeks back and you go 8 weeks back, you go 12 years back, 13 years back, but it all like flows.
Yes.
And you never get confused by like, is this like, where are we now? Like, you never get confused by that.
Yeah.
I thought that was seamless how he did all the flashbacks, and it made perfect sense. And I actually liked that structure of the movie.
I did.
To me, that enhanced the movie. I don't know what all the hand gestures are about with me today, but it just enhanced the movie. It just made the movie flow for me.
Yeah, I agree. And I said that about the review last time. Like,
yeah,
it's so funny that, like, especially now that we just talked about Shogun and how, like, TV shows are more effortless when it does, like, flashback and time jumps and whatever else, because it has the time to do so. The runtime to do so. For them to do it in this movie, like almost like as a volley or a chess match posturing every time it cuts to one of those things, and it makes perfect sense. I admired that so much. I thought it was one of the best edited movies, or one of the best constructed screenplays I've seen in a while.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. So go see Challengers, people.
Yeah. I'm glad, buddy. I'm glad you're on board. Anything else before we get on out of here?
Yeah. I think that's
we emptied the tank. We really did.
We emptied the tank.
Yeah, we'll probably have the deepest Fall Guy coverage of many of the podcasts that you're going to listen to. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. Next week, we'll see how much we jump on the apes. I know we said we were even kind of maybe dipping the toe of a little projection, maybe a little see what we like for the rest of the year, or some of those for the rest of the summer kind of talk, or maybe even a draft. We got some stuff. We'll get to some talking. But absolutely, this was a great episode. I appreciate you, man. And yeah, everybody out there, like, subscribe, hit us up on socials at Recent Act Pod, and you know, get out there, tell a friend, and make sure that you come back next week, because like I said, we got so much in the coffer. We mentioned all these big summer movies coming up, so you're gonna want to come back and hear the reviews for that. So we'll catch you next time on Recent Activity.